first I took up archery.
Ow!
Oh, sorry, Mr. Spectator Guy. Hey, it's because I have breasts. Archery is very difficult with breasts. It's in, like, Greek mythology. And then I took up fencing. Sorry, Mr. Referee, who wasn't wearing a protector.
Help me into some house, Benvolio, or I shall faint. A plague of both your houses!
You mean both my breasts, right? I'm really, really sorry. It's just very hard to fence accurately when you have breasts.
He's dead. He can't hear you.
They have made worm's meat of me. I have it, and soundly, too. Your houses!
Breasts!
Oof, now he's totally dead.
I played Mercutio in 97 at the Little Theater of Manchester opposite Mike Ziska. The critics called my performance.
Right. Stab him again.
So then I took up tennis.
Ow!
Sorry, ball boy. Ooh, your eye hanging out of its socket. It's very Beetlejuice. Hey, it's because of my breasts. You people just don't get it. Would you like to hear a show about the special challenges that breasts create for athletes?
Yay! Well,
maybe.
All right, then let's do this. And now he was banned from the 76 Olympics for his impure thoughts about Shirley Babashoff, Colin McEnroe.
You had to be there. And I couldn't help myself. But yeah, we are going to talk about breasts in sports today. It's something that until quite recently there just wasn't that much journalism about. The people responsible for there being some journalism about it are with me today. In studio is Megan Greenwell, senior editor at ESPN the magazine. And down the line with us in Los Angeles in the studio there is at KPCC is Amanda Hess. But you're not going to meet them for just a second. You've already met Amanda once. She's been on our show before. More than once. First, what we're going to do eventually is, in a more serious way than you just heard, talk about the ways in which breasts actually can impede. They don't necessarily have to, you know, completely impede, but can impede athletic performance and the things that athletes do in order to cope with that or don't do in order to cope with that and the ways in which it sort of even kind of affects sort of self-selection by athletes in terms of, you know, what they compete in and how they compete. Anyway, there are many stories to be told there, but we sort of thought before we kind of got there, it might make some sense to set the stage a little bit. And so we thought, who better to set that stage than Florence Williams, author of Breasts, A Natural and Unnatural History, which won a Los Angeles Times Book Prize earlier this year. Florence Williams, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So just to sort of begin, I hope we don't have to explain to people what breasts are, but it might even be worth talking about, as you do in your book, what breasts are really made of. I think people think they know, but they don't. So maybe it is fair to ask, what is a breast?
Well, it's a good question because I think people tend to think of breasts just visually. Mm. You know, they like to look at what they look like, but they don't actually know very much about how they work or, you know, how they evolved. So breasts are primarily made up of fat and the mammary gland, so glandular tissue, and then also collagen or connective tissue. And everything about the breast is really designed one way or another for feeding an infant.
And your book actually talks a lot in a way that we don't even have an inkling of time to go into and about the ways in which breasts because many of the things that are good about breasts are bad about breasts. Many of the qualities that make breasts an incredibly effective way to feed an infant also pose dangers to the owner of the breasts. Just to sort of skate past that, although people absolutely should read this book and you'll be surprised at what you find out. We're talking about Breasts, A Natural and Unnatural History by Florence Williams. But, you know, another thing that's happening, Florence, is that breasts seem to be getting bigger. Women seem to arrive at puberty sooner, and cup sizes by bra manufacturers are going into a scale that was completely unthought of in the past, unimagined in the past. What's that all about? Does anybody know?
Yeah, that's right. Modern life has kind of changed breasts in some interesting ways. And the two things you just mentioned, that breasts are getting bigger and also that they're arriving earlier in younger and younger girls, both of those things are believed, at least partly attributable to the Western diet. You know, our bodies are just getting bigger everywhere. And it's true of men, too. Even men are getting breasts that are bigger than men used to get. So a lot of it has to do with diet. And then also the breasts are filled with hormone receptors. And for better or worse, many of the industrial substances in our world actually mimic estrogen. And so it looks like there may be some interaction there with these estrogenic molecules telling our breasts to grow and to grow sooner than they otherwise would.
You know, your book, you get into a lot, as we're saying, of the biology of breasts. But obviously breasts exist in that way, and they don't exist independently of sort of human social interactions and human aesthetics. But it's not the case that our understanding of what the perfect female body type breast-wise is, assuming the word perfect should even ever be used, it's not a stable thing across time, right? I mean, attitudes and ideas about what breasts should and can be have varied a lot across the centuries.
Yeah, that's right. And it's actually something that anthropologists have been very interested in. They've been interested in breasts, and they've wanted to know, you know, why are breasts different in humans from in every other mammal? Which they are. Humans have breasts, that grow from the age of puberty, and then we have them our entire adult lives. Whereas other primates only have breasts, really these swellings on their chest while they're lactating, and then they recede. So people have been asking, you know, why is that? And a lot of anthropologists think, well, it's because breasts are this, you know, they must be a signal for men, and sort of like the peacock's tail. But then a lot of other women, especially in the field, have come to disagree with that because they say, look, you know, unlike the peacock's tail, the breast actually serves a biological purpose, and that's to feed infants. And the reason that they're big and sort of filled with fat, you know, are because of the unique requirements of the human infant. So it's kind of an interesting debate.
It is an interesting debate. I remember Ernest Becker, the anthropologist, talked about how in most animals, erotic cues are arbitrary and kind of, I mean, it's like a yellow stripe on the back of a snake or something, or as you say, a peacock's tail, which is a completely useless thing. It doesn't do anything except create maybe sort of a visual sign, hey, I'm over here.
You mentioned preferences, which do change. You know, I think some of these anthropologists would like to think that all men, for example, like big breasts, and we're certainly living in this myth, kind of this mythology today that bigger breasts are sort of better. But if you actually do the surveys, not just in the U.S., but even, you know, across cultures, you see there's actually tremendous variety in preferences among men. Some men like small breasts, some men like medium breasts, and some men say, you know what, I'm actually not really a breast guy.
Well, you know, I mean, one sort of armchair theory about all this, too, is it's kind of I'll compare it to my neighbor, Ed, who used to say that if what we think of as the perfect lawn, you know, the perfectly manicured green fescue is what occurred naturally, nobody would want it. They'd want what we think of as weeds now. And it does seem to me, if you look across history, the thing that you can't have, the thing that is less frequently occurring is sort of the thing that people want. And that's often the case erotically, too. I mean, if you look at the time of Titian, you know, in Rubens, where you have these paintings of these large-breasted women, probably, you know, because of nutrition and availability of food and stuff like that, that was probably a rarer occurrence. And I wonder today, now that, in fact, you know, there are bra manufacturers making KKK cups and even L cups, whether we might be getting ready to revert back to an appreciation of the more kind of athletic looking smaller breast size.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised because those fashions and preferences really do change, you know, frequently every couple of decades, it seems like. So it's possible that we'll sort of revert to this, you know, sort of Twiggy era where small breasts and, you know, fewer curves, I guess, you know, were sort of desired, or even during the flapper era, too, in the 20s, you know, the fashions were sort of about not having hips. And then, of course, you know, with Hollywood and Mae West and Marilyn Monroe, you know, things just change, and it's kind of fun to watch it.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break, and we're going to add our two sports journalists to this conversation, Amanda Hess and Megan Greenwell. Florence Williams will be with us. We're going to be talking about all kinds of things, including the aesthetic question won't entirely go away, and we will also come back to the subject of sports bras. But first, we're going to talk about just what happens when you step on the field of play with whatever breast size you've got.
It's whatever rings your bell. It's a fact of common knowledge that you can't deny. Boobies in the eye of the beholder. Anything you name it goes.
All right, we're back. And as we get through this, into this conversation, I hope that you will feel free to call in. 860-275-7266. We'd love for you to be part of this conversation, whether it relates directly to your own experience as maybe a woman who's been in sports and has encountered some of the phenomena we're going to be talking about here, or just as an observer, 860-275-7266. You may tweet us at WNPR Colin. I'm going to start out with Megan Greenwell, senior editor at ESPN The Magazine. Part of the reason that we're having this conversation, part of the reason that some of the writing and research that was done, is because ESPN has a regular issue called The Body Issue. Tell us about The Body Issue.
That's right. So The Body Issue runs every July. It's the biggest issue of ESPN The Magazine in terms of circulation and also in terms of page count. And the idea is, the highlight is the beautiful photography of nude athletes tastefully posed. But there are also, it's also a chance for great articles around issues surrounding the body. We often don't consider the physical body ramifications of sports. And so this story was part of a line of stories of biology, you know, truly biological stories about athletes.
Had the biological stories in the past been more pertaining to male athlete issues?
Typically, yeah. We had one on butts, which both men and women have, but it did focus mostly on men. Mm-hmm. And then the other story was very male specific.
Okay. You don't have to paint a picture for us. We get it. And we should say also that you yourself have been an athlete and have encountered, I mean, was that part of it, the fact that you were a nationally ranked fencer?
Yeah, that was part of the idea for the story, was I had some familiarity with how this works, certainly not on an Olympic level, but I was a nationally ranked fencer. I knew how one's breasts could get in the way, and, you know, it struck me as an interesting topic that no one else had covered.
When you say that you knew that, I mean, was that sort of just a commonly accepted thing among, I don't even know too much about how fencing works, and I know even less about how women's fencing works. I mean, I don't know. Is that whole idea kind of built into the world of women's fencing, that your breasts can be in the way, can be an impediment, can be a problem?
I don't remember ever talking about it with teammates or competitors, but I would be surprised if other women, particularly women whose breasts are a little bit bigger, didn't have the same experience I did. In fencing, you wear a heavy plastic protective chest plate, and so you can't even smush your breasts down quite as much as you can in running, because it's actually built out around them. So it can definitely get in the way, like I say, particularly if you're a little bigger.
All right. Enter journalist Amanda Hess, who tackled all this. She's been on our show about other topics as well. But she's the one who wound up talking to a lot of athletes about this. Amanda, first of all, overall, I get the feeling that when you started talking to women athletes about this, they were glad to be talking about it, and it was sort of something that they were very aware of, maybe talked about among themselves, but hadn't really shared that much with the outside world. Do I have that right?
That's right, and I was relieved to find that that was the case. When we started this story, the way that people were sort of talking about breasts and athletics was mostly as a sexist joke. Along the lines of, you can't compete like the boys because your boobs get in the way. And so I was a little bit scared to start talking to athletes and actually ask them, so do they get in the way? But what I did find was that every athlete that I spoke to, no matter what her breast size was or the sport that she competed in, did have a story to tell about how she deals with them.
Well, give an example. For example, in tennis, there are a lot of different body types, and Serena Williams famously has a very voluptuous body type. But you even talked, I think, to one tennis star who got breast reduction surgery, right?
I actually didn't speak with her, but she had done many interviews on this subject. Yeah. I reached out to her, and I think she was sick of talking about it. But she did get a significant breast reduction while she was sort of in the public eye and competing. After she did that, she rose in the ranks very swiftly. But it's sort of unclear whether that's because her boobs are smaller or just because she's a young tennis player who's getting better at her game.
But there is a surgeon in particular, I guess he's out in California, who kind of specializes in this for athletes, right?
Right. His name is Dr. Grant Stevens, and he specializes in breast reductions generally. So he's mostly seeing women who have felt basically their whole lives since puberty that they can't really live their lives fully because their breasts are too big. So they have trouble moving. They have trouble exercising. But he's also then encountered some college athletes, some professional athletes who have gotten breast reduction specifically for competition.
You know, as we're talking about this, too, I want to circle back and with Megan for a second, too, because one of the complexities here is that it is in just the way that Amanda was saying before. She was saying that because, in fact, whenever this had come up in the past, it had come up in kind of a raucous, locker roomy way. I think Ben Wright was the guy, the golf commentator, who got in a lot of trouble. I mean, he was sort of saying almost exactly what we're saying now, right? He was saying, I mean, he may not have said it in the best possible way, but he's basically saying what we said now, that golf is harder for women because you have these things that get in the way.
That's right. Ben Wright was part of the reason I got interested in the story, because I heard about this, you know, just this past year, long after it happened. And what he said in an interview was women have a handicap in golf because their breasts get in the way. And he said a variety of other way more inflammatory things, and so he was fired. But yeah, he may have had a point. And there is a golf coach, maybe more than one, but there was one particularly that we mentioned in the article, who actually teaches women a modified swing to get around their breasts. Because if you think about it, you know, in a golf swing, when you're a little leaned over and your arms are in a triangular shape, they really do physically get in the way.
By the way, if you want to be part of this conversation, as I said before, 860-275-7266, 860-275-7266. And just to stay that with that for a second with you, Megan, I sense, just doing some of the reading again, is for ESPN the magazine, this has been a complicated path to tread. There was one article on Candace Parker when she got pregnant, and it was sort of about her new body, but also got into the whole subject of what her breast size was at this point, how that was going to affect, how that was affecting her game, what kinds of adjustments she had to make. And there was a certain amount of pushback about that article, right?
Yes, and it can inherently feel a little lecherous when a publication, particularly one that generally covers men and where, frankly, most of the readers are men, is covering the physiology of women. It's very tricky territory. But I think we did it. I'm proud of how we did it. I think we did it in a sensitive, nuanced, complicated way. And we got several tweets after the article came out saying, well, you would never say this about men's anatomy, like talk about how men's anatomy gets in the way of their performance. And it gave me great pride to be able to respond to each of those and say, well, actually, here's the article from 2 years ago. So.
All right. So and we do have some people calling up here. We're going to get to the calls in just a second. I just want to come back to the idea of, you know, the notion of breast reduction for athletes. And since we do have Florence Williams here still on the line, I think this is sort of something that you looked at in connection with your book on breasts, A Natural and Unnatural History. Not necessarily in an athletic context, but the sort of maybe ratio between women who are getting breast enhancement versus breast reduction.
Yeah, I think there's this assumption that most of the breast surgeries out there are augmentations. And in fact, most of them are. About 300,000 women a year get boob jobs. And actually, that number is higher now than it's really ever been before. However, there are also 100,000 breast reductions every year. And some of those are in men. Most of them are in women. So there are a lot of women out there who, for a variety of reasons, do want smaller breasts. And just anecdotally, you know, among the people I interviewed for my book, and of course everyone talks to me about their breasts when they talk to me, but I did sometimes hear sports come up, you know, that they wanted to feel more comfortable, you know, jogging or playing tennis or whatever it was they were doing, and they felt like these big, heavy breasts, which actually can be very heavy, you know, got in the way.
And this is a point worth pausing over for a second, Amanda, because, you know, in your journalism, and we were sort of talking about this before going on the air, too, there's a distinction between, or worth making anyway, between how breasts will affect your game when you're really at the top of your field, when you're a competitive Olympic athlete, or whether you're when you're attempting to play sports at the very top of the collegiate or pro levels, and how they you know, whether or not they should affect your participation in sports if you have large breasts. But as she's suggesting, as Florence is suggesting, even for somebody just you know, doing average kinds of sports, it's, you know, it can in fact introduce a certain level of discomfort.
Right. And I spoke with a group of researchers about that issue. They are focusing specifically on really sort of normal, everyday exercises. The field is really focused specifically on running. So what they do is put women on a treadmill. They run braless, and they put a camera on them. And they're running at a pretty moderate speed and then sort of tracking how their breasts move at that speed. And it has a huge effect. But if you were to speed them up to a world record pace, I can't even imagine how the size and the movement of the breasts would affect that. The faster you go, the larger your breasts are, the more they're going to move, the faster they're going to move, and the more significant the displacement of the breast is going to be when it bounces.
All right. Our number, 860-275-7266. We've got some calls coming in here. Catherine from Greenwich, if you just hang on for a second, she's got a really interesting point to make about ballet dancers, which are not exactly athletes, but will fit right in with what we're going to talk about when we get to gymnastics. But before we do that, let's talk to Gay from West Haven. Hi, Gay.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to bring up the point that breast reduction can be by essentially force majeure as well. I'm a breast cancer survivor, and one of the things that they encourage after surgery is that you get more exercise, but frequently you wind up with mobility issues and limited use of your arm. And one of the things that has helped me a lot is the overhand motions that you get with tennis or with fly fishing and that sort of thing. And I was wondering if your guests could speak to that.
I don't know if any of our guests can speak specifically to that. I would also assume swimming would be great for that, too, as well. One thing that I would say, particularly since you're a survivor, I would definitely encourage that you read Florence Williams' book, which really will, if you haven't read it yet anyway, it sort of talks a lot about sort of how we got to this point anyway. I don't know, Florence, whether you had anything in particular that you would want to say back to what Gay's talking about.
Well, I think it's kind of an underappreciated side effect of breast cancer, you know, that it can be very painful after mastectomy and after surgery, and it can be difficult to participate in some sports. But I think you're right that those sports that emphasize arm movements can be really helpful. In fact, where I live in Washington, D.C., on the Potomac River, there's actually a team of canoe racers who are breast cancer survivors. And they find that canoeing motion, you know, is also really, really great for you know, working with those problems.
You know, as long as we're talking about breast reductions and breast cancer and breast surgery, one of the first weird places that my mind went to when we first started talking about this, because I'm a classics geek, was the whole notion in Greek mythology that the Amazon warriors would actually remove some, in some accounts, burn away their breasts so that they could draw the bow better. But Amanda, you did look at the actual competitive sport of archery to see, I mean, obviously that's mythology, but you looked at the actual competitive sport of archery to see whether, in fact, once again, there's any issue there, whether, in fact, women experience any disadvantage if they have breasts that get in the way.
I did. And most of the athletes I spoke with, even in the case of golf, were able to find a workable solution to get around their breasts. But archery was one of the cases where it really seemed like a tough nut to crack. The archer, Kristen Braun, who I spoke with, had this dilemma where in order to clear her shot around her breasts, she needed to anchor her shot further away from her body, but that diminishes her power and her consistency in the shot. So that was one case where she's still trying to work on something that really totally eliminates the contribution of her breasts, and she hasn't found a solution to that yet.
You know, just to sort of veer away from performance, and we're going to get back to performance, but, you know, just to go back to Megan Greenwell for a second, all of this, you know, as we were saying before, all of this kind of gets filtered through several different angles in one prism. You know, there's the sheer issue of performance, and then there is the issue of perception. We have, you know, in fact, we were talking before about the Romanian tennis player who had a breast reduction, partly because she was having, I think, some back issues. But there were some of her quote-unquote fans were protesting that. You know, I mean, there are, in particular, guys who relate to women in athletics the way that guys relate, the way that they relate to women everywhere else. And you know, whether it's that player or Serena Williams or Anna Kournikova or a whole bunch of other tennis players or women in golf. I mean, this constantly kind of comes up the other way, right?
Yes, and a lot of the way female athletes get talked about on the internet, thank you Bleacher Report, is, you know, hottest women athletes, which has a lot to do with the size of their breasts. And so when Simona Halep had this reduction surgery, which she explained as a performance issue, hundreds, if not thousands of people, I forget the exact number, signed a petition saying, please don't have this reduction, as if, you know, their opinions mattered. And I think that's really the interesting tension here, where this very overt sign of femininity comes up against what you think is best for your athletic career. It's a really tough decision to make, I think.
And for some women, too. I mean, it's for some women athletes, it's been, I don't know how to put this in the right way, but I mean, for somebody like, say, Katarina Witt, I mean, part of her mystique and her appeal is that, unlike a lot of figure skaters who tend to be, you know, very, very small in every possible way, because you got to do all these twists and jumps and you got to get airborne and stuff like that, she would be one of the few examples of a pretty curvy figure skater. And she hasn't necessarily really downplayed that either.
No, that's right. And she certainly sticks out for that reason, as does Serena Williams. And Serena Williams has been very proud of her body and has never tried to downplay it. But she has certainly taken, as many people as say she is beautiful because of her curves, she also gets called fat on the internet an amazing amount. And she's literally the greatest female athlete in the world.
If you want to chime in on this conversation, 860-275-7266, 860-275-7266. And Amanda Hess, you know, another part of this also is that notion of it's kind of coming from the opposite side, the notion of accepting who you are. And I think I got this from your article, but it could have been somewhere else, that when Simona Halep, the Romanian tennis player, had the reduction, or somebody was having a reduction, and I think it was a woman volleyball player from somewhere else kind of came forward and said, and sort of not exactly objected to it, but said, let's not send a message to a generation of women athletes that they need to get breast reductions or not have breasts or not compete because they do have breasts. Let's send the opposite message that, you know, that they can compete no matter how they're built.
That's true. I mean, one of the things that I found in researching the science around how breasts, and particularly larger breasts, affect people physically is that, along with sort of physical reactions like back and neck pain and rashes and carpal tunnel syndrome and spine disorders, women who have large breasts also disproportionately suffer from low self-esteem and anxiety. And a lot of that is sort of all of these mixed messages that they get about their breasts, which is, you know, on the one side, large breasts are good because in our culture, you know, we like to look at them. And on the other hand, you know, when women are exercising, they don't want their bodies to be seen as these erotic cues. They want them to be sort of athletic instruments. And so that's something that when puberty hits, young athletes have to deal with, and it affects them mentally and physically as well.
Feel free to join this conversation, 860-275-7266. We're going to get into the whole issue of gymnasts, who are, I think, in a somewhat special category, but we didn't even really think about this as we were preparing the show. They do have at least sort of cousins in the world of ballet. Catherine from Greenwich is on the line right now. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Colin.
So talk about that.
Yeah, I just wanted to include dancers in your conversation because we actually are athletes with pointed feet. I think the overall aesthetic selects for a thin body type. I had not known too many dancers in my career who were curvy. Generally, the aesthetic, the body type, what works best for all the jumping and turning and lifting is a thinner, leaner body type, as well as, you know, just all the hours performing and stuff keeps you quite thin. So I don't know if it's that it self-selects, but certainly if you had big breasts, it'd be very, very difficult to perform all the jumps and things that you have to do, so.
So, yeah, probably at a certain point anyway, if you're a little girl and you're interested in dancing and you're going to the classes and your body starts to develop, it does seem as though probably there are ways in which nature is going to send you a message like, well, there's just an aesthetic here and a performance issue that you don't fit all that well.
For sure. I mean, you might not be the curviest in high school, but you can really dance. You know, it's certainly, you find your spot, and it just seems to work that way very well. So I don't know if ballet dancers have sort of figured that out, or if the aesthetic calls for it, or which came first, or maybe there's more jumping that requires the body type. But, you know, certainly that seems to be mostly the case across the board.
All right. Well, let's go from there to gymnastics. Amanda, obviously gymnastics really are, you know, I mean, there almost can't be a Serena Williams in gymnastics. Talk a little bit about what you found out about that field.
Right. So gymnastics is the sport where not only are small breasts valued, but basically a lack of breasts is valued. So when I was speaking with gymnasts and people who have written about them, what I found was that, that sport really valorizes a girl's body. So if you have a woman's body, you're not going to be an elite gymnast. To the point where gymnasts will take measures to make sure that they do not develop into a woman while they're competing. Women have starved themselves, overtrained, in order to prevent puberty from hitting. And then, you know, these elite gymnasts will compete until they're sort of out of the game, and then they'll hit puberty much later than most teenagers. You know, they'll be hitting puberty at 18, 19, 20, which can be a physically and also an emotionally bizarre experience for these women.
You know, Megan, I found myself thinking about that even when the gymnastics championships were here in Hartford recently, that, you know, I mean, I increasingly have this very ambivalent, although probably not ambivalent enough, relationship with NFL football. Like, I've gradually started to realize that it's kind of morally indefensible on it, you know, on any kind of rational level. But I'm unfortunately not all that rational about NFL football, so I continue to like it. But, you know, even thinking about that with the gymnastics, and we had Bella Caroli here in town, in a way, I look at that and I look at the things that she's talking about. And for sports fans and sports journalists, you are taken aback a little bit. There are a lot of things that people have to do to train for sports. And in football, they do weird things, including put on way too much weight and develop man breasts and develop and risk diabetes and stuff like that. But this does seem to have some pretty significant health issues attached to it.
Yes, and I appreciated Catherine's point about, you know, self-selection and people finding their niche, but there's also, it can veer too far in gymnastics and related sports into, the coach selecting, particularly, you know, the hard-driving gymnastics coach stereotype that Bella Caroli, I feel like, fits very well, where Dominique Mociano, who was, you know, the pixie star of the 96 Olympic team, she was 14, and she had the body of a child much younger than 14, and she said she wrote in her autobiography that, you know, she longed for breasts because she was a teenage girl, and everything else fed to her by society was this is a good thing to have. And on the other side, she had coaches literally, you know, going through her bag searching for treats to make sure she was going to stay this 85-pound, maybe less, little pixie type. And so it can get dangerous, quite frankly. There was a book that is quoted in the article called Little Girls in Pretty Boxes about gymnastics and figure skating. And some of the stories in that book really horrified me. I mean, it can really quickly become abusive.
You know, Florence Williams, as you're listening to this, and Florence Williams is the author of Breast, A Natural and Unnatural History, it does seem as though we're almost at this really schizoid moment where if I were a young woman, I'd be saying to the rest of the world, make up your mind. On the one hand, we have this aesthetic, and it is an aesthetic in ballet, too. I hadn't thought about it that much. But, you know, you're just not going to be the Venus of Willendorf and then go off and do you're probably not even going to be Venus Williams and go off and do ballet or gymnastics. And you might incur some significant health risks or wind up kind of on the anorexia or bulimia track as a result of being part of this world. And then the rest of the time you're being bombarded with messages that your breasts aren't big enough.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think to be a growing girl in this culture is to be bombarded with all sorts of opinions, you know, about your body. You should look this way, you should look that way. Certainly, I think the majority of the pressure is right now for big breasts and for breasts that look sort of anti-gravity, because that's what girls and boys growing up see on the internet. I saw a statistic somewhere that, before a child reaches the age of 16, you know, he or she has seen something like, you know, thousands of pictures of naked breasts on the internet. And of course, now we know that many of those images are fake. I mean, they're either photoshopped or they're surgically enhanced. And so it definitely sends a really difficult message, I think, to both boys and girls, what to expect the human body look like. And I think it's really, it's tragic, really. And I think that parents and educators have a really big challenge ahead of them, in sort of making sure that both boys and girls kind of appreciate the natural variation in the human body and appreciate it for more than just what it looks like, but for what it can achieve either in sports, or in, motherhood, for example.
Well, and this raises an interesting point, Megan. And, a few years ago in the body issue, can't remember what year it was, but you, of course, do know, Diana Taurasi, the incredible Ugandan basketball player, was posed nude for the body issue. And it wasn't first of all, she looked fabulous. Second of all, her breasts were not exposed. Not that I stared and stared at this picture for hours, but my recollection is she's kind of curled, to almost kind of a fetal shape or something like that. So it wasn't, exploitive in that way. But, Diana Taurasi wouldn't be an example necessarily of somebody who leaps into mind as somebody who's going to be besieged by offers to pose nude for Playboy, which a number of professional women athletes have done. And I'm wondering, was ESPN trying to send a message that, okay, here's this other body type that's a very athletic body type, not a super voluptuous body type, but it really can look really great, and so here's another aesthetic for you to think about.
Yeah, to its credit, the body issue has always been about valorizing all types of bodies, It's still limited because it's all types of athletes' bodies, so they're still going to fit a mold to an extent. But, it really has been everyone from Serena Williams to Diana Taurasi to, on the men's side, this year we had a 72-year-old Gary Player with all of his wrinkles and everything, just proud of who he was. We had a sumo wrestler a couple years ago. And so, yes, I think we've been unabashed about saying that people have different types of bodies. Even elite athletes have different types of bodies, and let's celebrate all of them.
We're getting a lot of tweets about areas that don't fall into the world of sports, but really do sort of fall into the area we're talking about. Naomi tweets, not a sport, but also guitar playing. I wear my sports bra to band practice. Naomi also tweets, backpacking, 20-plus pounds, mushing my parts. Even women-specific gear isn't that great. What we're going to do is we're going to take a break, because that kind of leads us into the area of bras and sports bras and stuff like that, which is a whole other conversation, and also the problems of women athletes who've had wardrobe malfunctions, sometimes because somebody handed them the wrong thing to wear. Amanda's got some stories about that when we come back.
Do you realize the effects breasts have in the sport of curling? Me neither. But if either one of us listening to the show knew what curling was, I guarantee we'd be appalled. Today's show was produced by Patrick Scahill, Betsy Kaplan, and me, with help from our intern Garrett Argyanis. Connolly. The part of Bill Curry was played by Kelly Schumacher. On tomorrow's show, we're telling tales of roommates. And now, back to Colin.
I'm looking forward to that roommate show, because so far this week we've done the asexuality movement and breasts in sports. So could we do like a show that's just not a freaking minefield? Can we do one where I'm not constantly worried I'm going to say the wrong thing? All right. If you want to call up and say the wrong or right thing, our number, and we're running out of time for you to participate. We do have Maria from Manchester, some other people calling up right now, but 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. With us, Florence Williams, author of Breast, A Natural and Unnatural History. With me in studio, Megan Greenwell, a senior editor at ESPN, the magazine. Amanda Hess, freelance writer based in Los Angeles, is out there in Los Angeles at KPCC's studios. And we're going to talk a little bit now about sort of bras and sports bras. And Amanda, actually, your article begins with a mixed martial arts bout in which one of the mixed martial artists gets out there and realizes that she has two jobs. One of them is to contain the aggression of the fighter who's trying to hurt her, and the other one is to manage her actual breasts. Tell us a little bit more about that story.
So Ronda Rousey, who is the best known and probably the best female MMA fighter around right now, basically got the UFC to change its policy on not allowing women to fight in its league. So last February, Ronda Rousey fought another fighter named Liz Carmouche. It was the first female fight of its kind. But when they got into the ring, Ronda realized that her handlers had handed her her weigh-in bra, which is this very light bra that she wears in order to make sure that it's not affecting her weight before the match, instead of her fight bra, which is obviously, you know, a lot more formidable to sort of keep everything in place while she's trying to, like, bash somebody's head in. And so what ended up happening was Liz Carmouche jumps on her back, is strangling her. Ronda Rousey is trying to get her off, but at the same time, she feels this tiny bra sort of slipping down her body toward the mat. And so what she has to end up doing is peel this human off of her back, but at the same time move her bra to make sure that she does not have a wardrobe malfunction in this historic fight.
You know, throughout your article, there were some stories that were a little bit similar where it felt like, you know, this is a pretty essential thing to get right. If you're a woman athlete and you're going into some, you know, pretty important contest, it's an important thing to get right. And the people around these women seem not to have made sure. I mean, in this situation, as you say, this mixed martial arts athlete was handed really the wrong bra, a non-sports bra, about to go out there and basically put her life on the line at this, in this crazy sport. There was another story, I think it was in your article, about a long-distance runner, 5,000 meters, something like that, who also got out on the course with absolutely the wrong bra and spent an incredibly long haul. Well, I mean, it was like a wardrobe malfunction for thousands of meters, right?
Right. And in a sense, it's unsurprising that these sports and sports in general, which have been extremely male dominated, still don't know how to deal with women and they don't really know how to equip them.
Megan Greenwell, maybe you could say a little bit about that, too, because, I mean, in the world of sports bras, there are sports bras and there's like really great sports bras, right?
Right. So we didn't write about sports bras particularly, except for the wardrobe malfunction issue in the piece. But afterward, I started getting all of these tweets from people about their favorite sports bras and ended up on all these Twitter chains and email chains about the best sports bras. And I learned so much about the science behind it, which is like your typical $9.99 sports bra from Target really just flattens your breasts slightly. That's all it's meant to do. Mm. As you go up the chain, and I ended up buying a $68.99 sports bra, it separates your two breasts more like a regular bra and also compresses them, which restricts side-to-side motion, which is what they really recommend for athletes or even, you know, casual joggers with larger breasts. And they're hideous. I have to say, all of these sports bras are so, so ugly. But, you know, and none of them are perfect. You know, I spent nearly $70 on this one, and it's still not amazing. But they certainly do the job a little better than the $9.99 Target version.
Yeah, and I mean, at that point, really, if I was out there with Gina Carano trying to kick my head in, I would wear the best sports bra I could find.
Sure, you'd wear...
I'm wearing it right now, in fact.
Right, you'd wear the effective but hideous sports bra.
You know, Florence Williams, as long as we have you here, we're having a conversation that you know, that just didn't exist for most of the history of the human breast. I mean... you can say maybe give us a quick sense of the history of the bra. But, I mean, the sports bra, I know from reading Amanda's article, doesn't even come into existence until 1977. I mean, nobody cared about stuff like this, right?
Right. It's true. And I think you really see a change when women got access to engineering and to high-tech materials. High-tech materials really changed the whole, you know, manufacturing industry for lingerie. Once you had stretchy materials and materials like nylon, you know, suddenly you could sort of use interesting cone formulas. It's sort of advanced engineering, really, to come up with bras that work well.
All right. Let me grab a call here from Maria in Manchester. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Colin. Thank you so much for doing this show. I'm
sure.
Just old enough to have missed out on Title IX, but I was a promising ballerina and had my career totally squashed, no pun intended, at age 14 because I became too curvy. What I wanted to address is women who are not professional athletes and their the effect of large breasts on life and their health in general, such as neck pain, back pain, shoulder pain from the straps, underwires that impede digestion and breathing, how uncomfortable large breasts are, how difficult it is to find clothing, bathing suits, and how utterly humiliating it is to get patted down in an airport because you have so much metal in your bra that you set off the alarms.
Oh, dear. Florence Williams, this all sounds like something you could react to a little bit.
Well, I'm happy to say I think that this is changing a little bit, you know, with the bra technology we've mentioned. I've heard from women who have large breasts that I don't, but that things have gotten better, you know, and that with the right kinds of bras now, you know, you really can be much more comfortable and have some relief, you know, from that back pain and neck pain. This is the first story I've heard about setting off metal detectors, so I'm sorry that's happened.
No, that does sound bad. But we have a little bit of time left. Oop, there's something going on with that phone here. Let me just click it off here. Our number, 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. You know, Amanda Hess, I sort of skipped past this, but it's sort of an interesting story in terms of the kinds of double binds that we're talking about here. I seem to recall in your article also a description of an athlete. I think it was a hurdler, somebody who actually got breast augmentation or enhancement, and then really kind of discovered in terms of her sport, I guess kind of unsurprisingly, that was kind of a bad idea.
Right. So this happened in 2008. An Australian hurdler named Jenna Rawlinson received breast implants, and then she quickly had them removed. And this is another one of those cases where it was her feeling that maybe she was letting her country down, is what she said, by competing with these breast implants. But the science is not totally there as to whether, you know, that extra weight was what was really keeping her times down, or if she's just getting a little bit older as a runner. But for her, it was worth it to get them removed.
You know, as we're sort of winding down here, Megan, I assume this is sort of an ongoing conversation at ESPN, the magazine. The degree to which, I mean, it's something that as adult Americans we're so bad at, you know, the sort of separating out the sexualization of women and their breast, and yet, and I have to say, on the other hand, as a UConn basketball fan, a UConn women's basketball fan, I encountered relatively little of that. You know, I mean, for the most part, people who males, men who are fans of the women Huskies tended to sort of just look at it in terms of basketball. I rarely heard people, you know, talking and really, you know, drooling in the way that they do over Maria Sharapova or somebody like that. But I assume it's just kind of an ongoing struggle to work all those things out.
Yeah, it definitely is. And nobody wants to be seen as lecherous. And I think the advantage we have, you know, people think of ESPN as sort of a bro zone. The advantage we have is, you know, more than half of the magazine staff is female. Mm-hmm. More than half of the senior editors who do most of the frontline editing and come up with most of the story ideas are female. And so, you know, it's one of those things where, like, the particular story about the very male anatomy, it is great to have a male reporter and a male editor dealing with that. And the particular story about female anatomy, you know, it was really great to work with Amanda. Neither of us have obviously been Olympians, but we both have had breasts for, you know, a couple of decades and understand, have some idea of what it's like to deal with that.
All right. One last quick call from Louise in Rocky Hill. I think she wants to make a sports bra recommendation. Either that or a sports bar recommendation. It could have been a typo. Hi, Louise.
Both. I'm not an athlete, but I am rather large-breasted, enjoy the gym very much. I'm there a lot. I bike, I kayak, and it has always been an issue for me to find a well-fitting bra. So it's an issue that I think that might affect many women to be to feel comfortable in the gym, to feel comfortable out and about in the park and so forth. Title IX, catalog Title IX, offers some excellent support. I agree that if you were to wear them out in the gym without a shirt on, they're not that pretty. They could be kind of ugly and
armor looking. Can you get them for less than $70?
No, they're up there.
You're going to pay for it. All right, listen, we're all out of time. Thanks so much. I was trying to see if I could save Megan some money, but that's not going to work out. All right, so thanks so much to our great guest today, Florence Williams, Megan Greenwell, Amanda Hess, and we'll be back tomorrow with something that will not make my palms sweat. Oh, oh, I love you, baby. Yeah, oh.
I'm Kyone Wolf, and to improve my golf game, I've had my right breast augmented into a driver. 4!
Yes!